Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to have a dynamic hour for you. And by the way, be sure you keep a pad of paper handy as well as a pen, because you're going to want to write down information as we share it with you, I'm sure. Our call-in telephone number for later on in the hour is 877-876-5227. And telephone lines will be open at the bottom of the hour. Meanwhile, we have a wonderful guest. So many of you are involved with various levels of healing and exploration of self-development that whenever we have an opportunity to present someone that has perspectives that we think will empower you as an individual, we're always delighted to bring them on air. And that's the case for Dr. John Diamond, MD. He has written a number of books. I believe he's written over 20 books now. One of the more recent is called The Facets of a Diamond, and it's the reflections of a healer. Dr. Diamond, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, you are located in New York, are you not?
Yeah, Westchester County, yes.
In Westchester County. You have quite an interesting background behind you, and I know we're going to go into more detail, but I'd like to share information about your involvement in the world of medicine. You are a fellow of the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatry. You're a foundation member of the Royal College of Psychiatrists in the UK, and you're a fellow and past president of the International Academy of Preventative Medicine here in the United States. And you've held a number of numerous senior clinical and university teaching appointments in clinical psychiatry, basic sciences, and the humanities. You lecture throughout the world. You have sold thousands and thousands of books. But you really have a passion that is very significant to your writings as well as to the work that you've done throughout the years. You've had 45 years of research and practice in medicine, psychiatry, complementary medicine, and holistic healing. You've investigated a lot of different modalities that affect us physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. You also have been involved with the Institute for Music and Health and the Arts Health Institute. You like to train people on how to use art as a therapeutic modality. You are a very interesting man, and when I picked up your book, Facets of a Diamond, and I started to read it, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel that you were really writing about your own journey of exploration in your investigation of work with patients, yourself. Am I correct
Absolutely.
In my observation?
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, because it really is, it's a sort, it's not exactly an autobiography, but it's really saying, you know, what does being a healer mean to me, and what do I hope that it means to you? It's really something that anyone who's interested in healing, whether to be healed or to give healing, can sort of learn from by my experiences with myself, with my own situations throughout life, and with all the people I've tried to help over the years.
I find it quite fascinating that as the professional you are, so many of the professionals that would be in your positioning would do everything they could to create an illusion of not exposing their vulnerabilities, their fears, and their options. And I found that when I was reading your book, that in a sense you were working with some of those therapeutic moments yourself that you had to go through as a practicing physician
mm-hmm.
in working with people. That takes a lot of courage to be able to bring that out so Mr. and Mrs. Average individual can read it and they go, wow, this is what he felt as a physician?
Yeah, well, it's so wonderful that you've caught that. That's exact. I was just at a conference this weekend. Last week. It's the first psychoanalytic. I'm not an analyst, but I'm very interested in analysis. It's the first analytic conference I've been to for 40, 50 years. And the whole point of psychoanalysis is to keep yourself as it were, hidden from the patient. And I feel the very opposite. I feel that the more that the, I don't call them patient, the student sees me as I am, gives me a better chance to see them as they are and to help them see themselves as they are. It's not trying to promote a fantasy, but to give them the reality, which is why I try to work in my own plays. I talk about myself as I've written the book and my own experiences, because in a sense the best way I can help people is to help them see themselves through seeing another, for example me, as I am. And the whole secret of our work on earth, in a sense, is for us to really understand ourselves. And so the book is really a way of saying, this is how I've tried to understand myself and what I'm doing, and it may help you to find out who you are and what you would like to have done to you, or preferably what you would like to do for others in terms of healing them.
You have a poem in here, and I'd like to share it with my audience. It's titled, I Am Me. I am or have been a doctor of medicine, a psychiatrist, an acupuncturist, an applied kinesiologist, a musician, a composer, a writer, a poet, an artist, a photographer, a recording engineer, a son, a father, a grandfather, a husband, an Australian, an American, etc., etc., etc. I am me, and all of me, I bring to you all of you.
Right.
Now, when someone would be that way with a patient, to me, it would create a sense of harmony, because it would say, I am who I am. I may have more knowledge than you do in certain areas, but for me to find out what your needs are, I want you to know I'm a human being just like you.
Yes.
That is a tremendous step forward for anyone, I think, professionally on just about any level, but especially in medicine, because doctors have so often been put up on pedestals that actually, in my view, and this is my personal bias, puts them at a very strong disadvantage, because often people won't communicate if they feel you're some kind of plaster Paris idol up on a pedestal.
Well, remember, someone told me that statistically, the average time an oncologist spent with a patient is 6 minutes.
That's terrible.
And I mean, I don't have a formal appointment, because we tend to just spend time, but no one I spend any time so less than an hour or two or more with. It's being yourself and helping them to be themselves. Now, when somebody comes to a doctor, they start off, they never see the doctor as a person. He's a provider of something to relieve the pain, something to do this, whatever it may be. He's not seen as a person, but as an object who delivers.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that you hide behind a white coat, a glass screen, and a couch, whatever it may be, the less chance you give the person who comes to you to see you as you really are. And it's only when they start to see you as you are, they can start to see themselves and their loved ones that way. It's a wonderful moment when the person suddenly looks at you differently, and you can see it's the first time he's seeing me as a person. And they may say something like, oh, I'm sorry you've got a cold, or whatever it may be. And you see, they're seeing me, because they're now starting to relate to me and others beside me, their loved ones, as people, not just as givers and takers, as objects, but as real people. And that, in many ways, is the start of healing as distinct from the start of treatment. It starts when the healer is seen as a person. And I can't stress that enough. You see, all illness is, in a sense, a form of egocentricity, of egoism. The person has gone into themselves. They've ceased to relate fully out, to give out fully. They turn in on themselves. And to me, this is the start of illness. Egoism is illness. And altruism is health. There's a new word I just discovered called allocentric.
Allocentric?
Allocentric. It was coined in 1927. A-L-O-centric. It's the opposite of egocentric. It means when you, as it were, put others in the center and not yourself. And and this is so important. For example, I don't want to help somebody to get themselves better. I want to help them so they can help somebody else. Because it's the altruism, the allocentricity, if you like, which is the healing. In the same way, every time a mother is loving towards the child, the mother's own life energy, the mother's own healing powers are activated, as well as the child. I mean, I remember once years ago in England, I saw a man who was had terrible surgery, and when you'd visit him, all he'd do was talk about himself. The stitches hurt this, the pain that, the doctor said this, just on and on about himself. Never cared particularly about me or his family who were there visiting him, but all about himself, himself, himself. That's part of his illness. Now, as he started to get better, he started to talk about the other patients in the ward he was in. And he started to talk about the nurses, and he was now relating. He was thinking out, and in his own way, trying to help them. He'd gone from egocentric to allocentric, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing great. And then he got a hospital infection, and everything, he went back into himself. I, and that's how he died. It was a terrible tragedy, because he really did, in one sense, transcend the illness from the egocentric point of view to the allocentric.
My guest today is Dr. John Diamond. He is a holistic physician in more ways than one, and this has been a journey of his, and he relates his story very well in this wonderful book called Facets of a Diamond, Reflections of a Healer. And I know so many of you listening to this broadcast today have such an interest in this area. You really are interested in taking better care of yourselves, or you want to help other people be well. This is a book that's very good reading. And Dr. Diamond, I like so many of the statements you make. You say a medical diagnosis is like Orion's belt. Each patient is a universe, and a true understanding of him or her is an understanding of each star in the universe and the relationship between each star and all of the other stars that comprise the universe. Holistic therapy.
Yes.
You put all of these different things together. What was your aha? How did you wake up to this after having gone through so many years of training?
Well, no, I endured the training, but in a sense, my philosophy has never changed since I was a kid. You see, when I was about 5 or maybe 6, I was in a children's hospital with some sort of infectious disease. I presume it was hepatitis because I was jaundiced, and no one knew what it was, and it was thought that I was going to die. And I could remember being wheeled out into the lawn outside my room, and my body being drawn into the ground. And as a kid, I sort of knew I was dying.
Mm-hmm.
And after I'd had all sorts of, you know, operations and goodness knows what and investigations and, you know, and nothing was working. And then one day they decided, although I wasn't anemic, they decided to give me a blood transfusion from my father's best friend, Uncle Albert. And we lay there on bed side by side, and the blood is coming directly from him into me. And I can see his blood coming into me through this glass tubing.
Hmm.
And I remember thinking, you know, this is some sort of miracle. And within 2 or 3 days, I was home. And the illness never came back. It just, it would, able to do whatever was necessary. But I've had many examples of this with myself, and of course many with the people who have come to me, that if you raise the life energy, I mean, this is where doctors have it wrong. They think it's what they do. All a healer is doing is waking up the healing power within the person. Everyone has healing power within them. And all another person can do is to sort of wake it up and get it going. Now, when I first started in my first few weeks as a young doctor, it was in a neurosurgery ward. And there were two male patients, both 24, both paralyzed from motorbike accidents, in beds, side by side. And they both, at the same time, got the same hospital infection. They were given the same antibiotic, and in a week, one was cured, and one was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to my supervisor, what gives? He said, well, some have got it, and some haven't got it. And I said, what do you mean by it? And he sort of shrugged his shoulders, and that goes back to 1958.
Mm-hmm.
And my work ever since then has been to try to find out what the heck is this it, and how do we activate it? When I looked at these two men, it was obvious. The one that got well, you go to him, he'd be doing his exercises, he'd be cheerful, he'd be bright, he kept on with his girlfriend, he did his correspondence courses, and you know, he was as best he could be. He was alive and vital in this terrible situation. The other man complained and moaned, and he broke off. He wouldn't talk to people. He kept himself, you know, face to the wall most of the time. He was miserable, miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And he just didn't have that will to live. And so everyone I see, the first thing I've got to know is, do you really want to live? It's not enough, as a wonderful doctor, Georg Grodek, wrote years ago, that it's because the patient comes to the doctor, it doesn't mean that he really wants to get well. A little part of him might, but not the rest of him. Because the fact he's not well is because most of him hasn't wanted to be well, with exceptions, of course. And so the idea, my work is always to assess how much of this person really wants to be healthy, really wants to heal himself or herself, and then how do we increase that percentage? How do we get, hopefully, all of him or her to really, really want to embrace life? That you can say, they've got to embrace life. You've got to enthusiastically, passionately, wholeheartedly, gratefully embrace their lives. That's what healing is about.
Something that comes to mind, we women often will jokingly say we cannot afford to be sick because there's too many things to do. We can't afford to die.
It's very expensive to die. Of course, I wouldn't say this about women as such, but I would certainly say it about mothers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every great healer has, regardless of sex, has to be motherly, has to be, because that's where, you know, I would love to be a woman, to be a mother, to know what is it really like. I mean, I think any male can never really be as healing, as loving, as comforting as a mother. And I think a mother's, you know, just has to take over, as my mother did, just take over from doing to her children what could be done with other people. It's what mothers do automatically. Every great healer has this maternal instinct as well. You can see some wonderful treaters who are extremely masculine, extremely jocks, but extremely macho. But they can be wonderful treaters, but it takes this other side as well to be a healer.
Yes, I would agree with you. For those healers that I've known in my life experience that have really touched the lives of many people, it has come from what you use as a word, the maternal positioning of compassion and empathy.
Yes.
That when they are with people, they're with them. When they're interacting with them, they're interacting with them. They don't take on their problems, but they are there with that sense of compassion and willingness to listen and to be aware of what's going on. Relative to what you were just saying about people really wanting to be ill, you have a story in your book. And by the way, for those of you listening, I want to remind you, it's called Facets of a Diamond. And Dr. John Diamond has so many credentials behind his name and so many years of experience. And this is a part of his journey. So when you read his book, you are going to understand many of the things that he has grown through that he shares with you, because he is the teacher and he is one that wants to pass on his knowledge to you. So I think this book is very, very good for anyone that wants to get a side of understanding relative to how a physician feels as he's growing through his own development.
Right.
Your story in your book, Dr. Diamond, is a mountaineer ascends the steep face step by step, hammering a pit firmly into the rock to support him for each step on his progress. Bitten by bitten, each one secure, so he will never fall back. How long will it take? It depends on the mountaineer and the mountain. How long will it take one to ascend to the top? It all depends on you and your mountain. Just concentrate on making each step a secure, permanent change. That story encompasses a philosophy that one could apply to everyday life, taking things one step at a time.
Yes, but always having in your mind that when you've done something, you have been permanently changed as a result of that. You're never the same person that you were before you did that activity. And it's really looking at every day, at everything that happens that day, whether you go to see the doctor or not, but everything, that you are changed as a result of all of these experiences. And always, it's a change for the positive, always progress, but there's always this going forward, this always ascending. And the function of the healer is just to encourage that process a little bit more than what you've been doing on your own. But you will be changed. That's the whole point. We are changed every day. I'm not the person I was yesterday. You're not the person you are yesterday. And each of us has evolved just in the way that we are supposed to evolve. That's just the way it goes. Always changing, always for the positive. As I say, the healer's task is just to make that a little bit of a bigger step and a little bit more understanding of what's going on with our lives. Because the biggest problem we have in life is, who the heck are we and why are we? Who are we and why are we? And I think the essence of all healing, in a way, comes down to helping not just the cure of the disease. That's very important, but it's not the main thing, in a way. It's much more than just the disease. It's the total person and helping him to develop a true understanding of who he is and where he is and why he is. That's the most important thing. There's many people who can treat the disease, but it's far, far more difficult to, as it were, heal the total person. After all, the word heal comes from the same origin as the word whole. And to heal is to make whole, to make the person aware of his total self in his environment. That's holistic.
Now, Dr. Diamond's book has so much wonderful information in it, and I will just say he has one of his segments in his book. He said one of the best ways to learn how to be very good at whatever you want to do is to be around those people who are skilled and knowledgeable, and just you absorb things by osmosis. He's
right.
Also into working with art and with music. So for those of you that have an interest in those particular modalities for therapy work, I think he just gives such a wonderful perspective. Facets of a Diamond, Reflections of a Healer. Again, Dr. John Diamond is my guest today. And his book has so much in it that if this is something you want to know about, you want to read, you want to see a physician's own journey, his perspectives that he's developed and is continuing to develop. As he said, we're not what we were 30 seconds ago. We're always changing and growing. Dr. Diamond, I know that your book is with Amazon.com, but do you have a website that people can go to?
Yeah. I think it's, I really don't know, but my wife handles it. I think it's just diamondcenter.net.
Okay. Diamond, D-I-A-M-O-N-D, center.net.
Yeah, .net, yeah.
And for those of you that would be interested in finding out more about Dr. Diamond, go to that website, and then you'll get all of the information. And he also has an email and, you know, his phone number. All of that contact information is on his site, diamondcenter.net. Now, Dr. Diamond, we're almost out of time.
Oh.
Is there a thought you would like to leave with my listeners today?
Yeah, that within you is everything you need to heal yourself. If we go back just a few thousand years, all healing we did ourselves. But now we've become lazy and we pass it over to the physician or to the healer to do what is in us to do. And for what, like a million years, we did automatically. Well, we have had advances, of course, but this power to heal ourselves is within us. So all you have to do is look at yourself very closely and ask yourself, in all truthfulness, how much do I really, really want to be healthy? As I said before, by that I mean to enthusiastically, passionately, wholeheartedly, gratefully embrace my life. And if you can't tick off all of those in the most positive way, ask yourself, why not? And whatever your meditation is, think about it, work on it, because it's in you. The power to heal yourself is within all of us. It was inbuilt. It was in us. And all we have to do is want it and actuate it, and we can heal ourselves.
Dr. John Diamond has been my guest. Facets of a Diamond, Reflections of a Healer. Wonderful reading, insightful for anyone who wants to take the time to discover a physician's perspective, but also themselves. Dr. Diamond, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break, and when we come back from that break, those phone lines will be open, 877-876-5227. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I just want to take a moment here to let you know about the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, and it's coming up. Yes, and tomorrow is the second weekend, and I'm so excited about all of this activity. We have so much going on, and it is an absolute delight to be able to share it with you, because I'm going to actually be, as I've been telling you, right out there on site. Now, the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair is an event that happens every year, during this same time, during the month of August, the 12th, the 13th, the 19th, and the 20th this year. That's the two remaining weekends we have. It's being held at the Mentor Creek Ranch out in Gig Harbor, Washington. And if you enjoy fantasy, if you enjoy being able to be a part of history, and you would like to spend a day where your imagination and your enthusiasm can just have an open forum environment, then you're not going to want to miss it. And the hours for this event are 10 to 6, Saturday and Sunday. And if you want to get your tickets in advance, all you have to do is go to the website, WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com. Not only will you get discounted rates if you go through the website, but you can also print out your tickets. You don't have to stand in line and wait. And later on during the hour, I'm going to share with you some of the wonderful events that are going on there. But I love it because I get to get all dressed up in my fancy costumes and be out there on site. And I do have a booth there. Look for the booth that has the bright gold and yellow banners with the giant red lions on it. That's my logo when I'm at the Renaissance Fair. And just come on by and say hello. I'd love to meet you. And also, I'm doing many consultations, and then I have a number of books from a lot of the authors that I've had on my show. So just stop on by. But, oh, it's just wonderful, wonderful fun for the family. And the times that you can spend there will be memorable. You get to see the royal court. There's jousting. There's all kinds of contests and events and activities that are going on within the 16th century Renaissance fantasy. So I invite you to come out and do again. Go to the Washington Ren Fair. Remember, there's an E on the end of fair.com. You can get all of your information. And I hope to see you there. Come on by and say hello. It is so magical. People come back year after year after year. And this is their ninth year for this wonderful, wonderful event. So I do hope you will join us for the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. And we're going to be there tomorrow and Sunday. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, 877-876-5227. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight, which I would be delighted to do. And all I need from you when you call in is your first name or your initial. And then let me tell you what I see. And then after that, you're welcome to ask about anything that you like. Also, don't forget to have that pad of paper and pen handy because I have an awesome recipe for summer. Not only is it healthy, but, oh, it tastes so good. And let me tell you what it's going to be. Marinated portobello cheeseburgers. Yes, if you've ever had grilled portobello mushrooms, oh, are they good. And they're the size of a large salad plate. They're just delicious. So I'm going to give you that recipe in a while. It's absolutely marvelous. I also want to thank you, those of you that have been sending me emails, sending me wonderful, wonderful stories, which I'm going to be sharing with you. I was reviewing so much of the material today, and I so appreciate these wonderful stories, and I, again, will be putting them on here, and I'm going to be sharing a dog story with you in just a moment. But it's so great to get this information from you because you have so many different things that you can share. And if you have a recipe, a wonderfully inspirational story that can make a difference in people's lives, if you want to let me know about these things, send it to my email, donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. That's D-E-L-P-H-I and then the word international.com. I'm going to share Linda's story. This came to me, again, in an email. I just think email is great. And I want you to know that this is about her dog, Lucky. And, oh, excuse me, no, Linda sent this to me. It's not her dog. I have to correct myself. It is a dog that belonged to some friends of hers, Mary and her husband, Mike. So those are the correct names that I'm supposed to use here. And she said, these people had this wonderful, wonderful dog, and his name was Lucky. Now, whenever Mary and Mike would have company come over for a weekend, they'd warn their friends to not leave their luggage open because Lucky would help himself to whatever struck his fancy. Inevitably, someone would forget and something would come up missing. And, of course, all Mary or Mike had to do was go to Lucky's toy box in the basement, and there they'd find the treasure that he had confiscated among all of his wonderful toys. And he always stashed whatever he found in his toy box, and he was very particular that all of his toys stay in that box. Now, Mary found out that she had gone through an examination, and when it was all finished and she had some tests done, she had breast cancer. And she was terrified. She really thought she was going to die from the disease, and so she ended up scheduling a double mastectomy, and she was terrified throughout the entire procedure. And before she went to the hospital, the night before she was to go to the hospital, she cuddled up with her wonderful pal, Lucky. And while she was cuddled up next to this wonderful friend of hers, a thought struck her, what was going to happen to the dog when she was gone? Now, this dog was only 3 years old, absolutely loved her husband, Mike. But he really was Mary's dog. He was totally devoted to her, 100%. She thought to herself, if I die, Lucky will be abandoned. He won't understand that I didn't want to leave him. And the more she thought about this, the sadder she got, because she was thinking about death. And the double mastectomy that she went through was very, very hard on her physically, a lot worse than her doctors had thought it would be. and she ended up staying in the hospital for well over 2 weeks. Well, Mike would take Lucky out every night and walk him faithfully, just like Mary had done. But Lucky was very, very sad. He got very droopy. He would whine. He was miserable. And he was just not doing well at all. Well, after 2 weeks, finally the day came for Mary to leave the hospital and to come on home. And when she did, she was so exhausted she couldn't even make it up the steps to her bedroom. So her husband, Mike, set up the couch and made her as comfortable as she could possibly be so she could stay right there on their main floor and just left her alone to nap. Now, Lucky stood by her as soon as she came home, and he just watched her. He watched her and just wouldn't take his eyes off of her for a second. However, he was acting very strangely. Mary called to him, and he wouldn't come to her. Well, Mary became very sad about this. She thought that he was angry with her, and she just didn't know what to do. Well, she was so weak, eventually she fell asleep. Now, what happened next was just absolutely amazing to Mary. She could not move when she awakened from her nap. She found that her head and her body were so heavy and so very, very hot, and she started to panic. But something changed. Her panic soon gave way to laughter. She started laughing. Mary realized what her problem was. She was covered, literally blanketed, with every single treasure that Lucky had. While she had slept, this dog who had been grieving for her had made trip after trip to his basement section, bringing his beloved mistress all of the very favorite things that he had. He had covered her with his love, bringing every single toy out of his toy box. You know what happened with that? Mary forgot all about dying. Instead, she began to live. She and Lucky started walking together, and she was able to walk further and further every night. And that was over 12 years ago, and Mary is very much cancer-free still. And Lucky, he still steals treasures and stashes them in his toy box. But Mary is his greatest treasure. Isn't that a fabulous story? Anybody that says to me, and by the way, I've had people say this to me, dogs have, and animals, they just don't understand things. They're just not intelligent. You mean to tell me that an animal that would do this act of love with the person that was so special to him was not thinking? That's a method of communication. And he communicated in the only way he knew how, by bringing her his treasures. There are so many wonderful stories like this, and I want to thank Linda for sending it to me. There are so much that we need to be grateful for. And oftentimes there's that act of love that seemingly is, in some people's minds, so insignificant. Or maybe it's, oh, that's just coincidental. I don't think so. Remember, often we can reach out in ways that are going to let other people know that they have a right to live and to be alive. And remember what Dr. Diamond said just a few minutes ago. We have to have that feeling of we want to be alive, we want to participate in life, and we want to live with an energy and a zest. And that's what Mary had forgotten. And Lucky reminded her of it with a demonstration of his love. Again, I want to thank Linda for that wonderful story because it is just so inspiring. And when you can be aware of that, you become then powerful in your life. You become the power. You're the one that turns on the light inside of you. Nobody else is going to be able to do it for you unless you're willing to let that light be turned on. So remember that. And whenever you're around other people that maybe are having a difficult time, let your light shine in its own way so that they can have a glimmer of it, and then they can decide whether they're going to want to turn on the light inside of themselves. This is Donna Siebel, and I want to tell you about my guests that are going to be coming up next week. And yes, after the break that is going to be coming up, then we'll be giving you the recipe about the marinated portobello cheeseburgers. Ooh, that makes you hungry just thinking about it. Okay, this is who we have on Monday. We're going to be talking to Perry Garfinkel. Now, Perry is a very accomplished photographer. He works for the National Geographic, and we're going to be hearing about some of his travels, and I love the title of his book. It's called Buddha or Bust. Also, we're going to be talking with David Taylor next Tuesday about ginseng, the divine root. Not only is this something that can be useful for medicine, but we'll be sharing some recipes with you regarding ginseng, history, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then we're also going to be talking with Mary Getton, Communicating with Orcas. This is a fascinating book, absolutely wonderful, and I'm so delighted that we're going to have her as a guest. And then on Thursday, we're going to have an open mic day, and then Friday of next week, well, we're going to teach you how you can flip. Turn your world around. If you don't like what you've got, we're going to help you do a flip. And Jared Rosen is a gentleman that is the expert in that area. So we have a wonderful lineup of guests next week. And by the way, remember, you can go into bbsradio.com, click on the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll be able to find out about my lineup of guests for this month. And also, we're starting to put in the guests for September. So you're not going to want to miss one of them. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a second here, so don't you go away. We're going to be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. By the way, I want you to remember this weekend, and that's starting tomorrow, I'm going to be doing an appearance at the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. This is such a marvelous event. If you want to step back in time, walk through the castle gates and enter into a world where you can play, enjoy, be entertained, even be educated to a certain degree about craftsmanship of that era and time, this is an event you're not going to want to miss. We have people come in from all over the country. I was talking with a woman from Canada who made a special trip down. She comes down every year because she said, "This is so exciting for me. We spend the whole weekend just participating in the Renaissance Fantasy Fair." And you know what? You can get your own costumes. Yes, you can wear your own if you like, but you also can rent costumes there. So you can come in wearing shorts and then dress up like the grand lady of the court and or the beggar woman, whichever, or the beggar guy, whatever you'd like to do. All of this is available to you. And then spend a day at in a leisurely way just viewing so much beauty. A giant that's over 12 feet tall. There's gnomes. There's fairies. There's wonderful, wonderful events like the jousting. Yes. And you will see these magnificent, magnificent horses that are going to charge down the list carrying armored knights jousting for king, queen, country, or maybe the hand of a fair maiden. And believe me, they are wearing real armor. It is amazing. And then you're also going to find that there's equestrian events, sword fighting, there's gypsy dancing, Celtic music, storytelling, children's games, all kinds of musical performances, magicians, puppet shows. There's even the First Knight Academy that'll teach you the art of sword fighting to anybody who wants to learn, no matter what your age. It is delightful, and I'm going to be there. I have a booth. Look for the golden yellow banners with the large royal-crested lions in red, and you will be able to find me, and I'm doing many consultations there. But it's such a delight. This is the ninth year of this annual event, and I am so proud and pleased to be a part of it, and it's just a delight to be able to bring it to you. Now, if you want to get your tickets in advance, and if you want to make sure you save money in getting those tickets, go to their website, WashingtonRenFair.com, WashingtonRenFair.com, and you will be able to get your tickets, and you will be able to have them. You don't have to stand in the long line to get into this wonderful event. We have people lining up at 9 o'clock or even earlier in the morning because they want to get there to be able to participate in as many of the activities as they possibly can. So you don't have to wait. You can have your tickets all ready to go. Remember, WashingtonRenFair.com. Hours are 10 to 6, and it's at the Mentor Creek Ranch in Gig Harbor, Washington. Donna Sebo here. I told you I had a yummy recipe. And you know what? Not only is this a recipe that's going to taste good, but you aren't going to feel like you're going to put on 50 pounds. Portobello mushrooms are absolutely delicious. And here's all you're going to need. You're going to need a half a cup of balsamic and olive oil vinaigrette salad dressing. And you can make up your own if you want, or you can buy it, whatever works best. And you're going to need 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh basil. You want the fresh, not the dried. 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh basil. You need 1 teaspoon of Dijon mustard. A teaspoon of dry steak seasoning. 1 teaspoon of dry steak seasoning. 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme. 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme. 4 plum tomatoes. And you want to chop them up. And that'll come to about a cup and a quarter. That'll be 4 plum tomatoes chopped. And you want a clove of garlic minced. You want 6 portobello mushrooms, and they'll weigh about 6 ounces each. And you want to take the stems out of them. You just want the flat crown of the mushroom. So you need 6 of those. You need 6 quarter-inch thick slices of fresh mozzarella cheese. And you want 6 small ciabatta rolls. Oh, that's my husband's favorite bread, unless I make the bread. Ciabatta, he just absolutely loves. 6 small ciabatta rolls, halved. And then you need 1 1/2 cups of baby arugula. 1 1/2 cups of baby arugula. That's about 2 ounces. And then, you know, you may want to have some other things to snack with, like some potato or vegetable chips, whatever. That's totally optional. Now, this is what you do. It's so simple. In a plastic food storage bag, you combine your dressing, your basil, your mustard, your seasoning, your steak seasoning, and your thyme. And you want to combine 3 tablespoons of this mixture with tomatoes and garlic and reserve. You put that aside. Now, and to the remaining dressing mixture that's in the bag, you want to add your mushrooms. And you want to seal, and you want to turn them to coat. And you just leave them alone for 20 minutes. Mushrooms are like sponges. They just soak up all kinds of good stuff. And then you can either use your broiler or you can use a grill. If you've got a grill outside, these are perfect. And I think the outside grill is just awesome because it gives a whole different flavor when you barbecue them. So you want to have it nice and hot. And then after 20 minutes, all you do is remove the mushrooms from the bag and you discard the marinade that you've marinated the mushrooms in. So you take those mushrooms out, you grill them, you turn them once until they're tender, and it's about maybe seven minutes each side, maybe a little bit more. And then what you are going to do is top each mushroom with 1 slice of cheese, and then you want, after you've turned it, and then you want to grill it again, the other side. You want to grill it covered until the cheese is melted, about 1 to 2 minutes. And then you serve the mushrooms on rolls with your tomato mixture and the arugula. And if you desired, you might have chips or something else that you want as a little side dish accompaniment. But it is so easy and so good, and it is filling. Those mushrooms are absolutely delicious. So those are your marinated portobello cheeseburgers. And I would say if you like your cheese spicy, then use some of the Monterey Jack spicy cheese. And depending on what your tastes are, you might want to try some of the other cheeses. If you like a sharp cheddar, that can be just as delicious. It all depends on what your tastes are. So anyhow, that's a recipe that I think just about anybody and everybody would like, unless you've got someone that is allergic to mushrooms. And I do have a friend that is allergic to mushrooms. This is Donna Sebo, and my goodness, we are almost out of time. It goes by so quickly, and I want to remind you of our guests that we're going to be having on Monday, Perry Garfinkel, and we're going to be talking about Boot or Bust. He's a National Geographic photographer who's going to be sharing some fun things with us, and I know that you will enjoy him. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never forget that you are the master magician. And within yourself, you have the chance to make a magic that can make your life as rich as you want it to be. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent weekend, and I'll talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.